got me down.
Hey guys, I'm back.
Hey, welcome back.
What? Hi.
Hey, your
thanks.
Your voice changed since the news segment.
I heard I had an interloper. A doppelganger came and posed as me.
Yeah,
well, I mean, it sounded pretty similar, but
yeah.
We didn't even know you were gone, really.
Oh, good. That's I'd love to hear. Yeah.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 260, and I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And we're here to talk about things.
We are.
I'm just going to...
Go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say, I'm just going to cut right to the chase. I'm excited because the Mass Effect hype train has officially left the station, and I think we really can start talking about it again, which we will certainly do this week.
You know
the what?
The Mass Effect hype train, man. It's crazy. Mm. Yeah.
You all aboard? All aboard the hype train?
I'm super aboard.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
you've heard of Mass Effect, right?
No.
Remember it's that game you played like in 5 days and completed the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. That was insane. I think that was two, right? That I think I did in
three.
5 days.
I think it was
three. Was it three?
Yeah.
I think it was, we all rushed through that three was... because we got to talk about it. So we did. I know I did Mass Effect 3 in, you know, an insane amount of time.
Yeah.
We really regretted going that fast.
We played it with the quickness.
Yeah.
Because we had to play that multiplayer, man.
Oh, yeah. Multiplayer. I'm so excited. I'm happy that there are now screenshots of it. Like it exists.
Oh yeah, the Andromeda multiplayer.
Yeah. But I mean, like, it's been very hush hush for so long, and I can't wait to do that again. It'll be very.
We still don't know much about it. I mean, the good news is, you know, they're for sure going to be at PAX. I looked at the PAX schedule coming up for PAX East, and there is a big BioWare presentation on the main stage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also assuming, and this is just a guess, that they're going to be having a BioWare base again, and that they are probably going to have, if the past is any indication, playable Andromeda, I wouldn't say story, but probably multiplayer on the show floor.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is only a couple weeks before launch. So
remember DAI came out, like they had those in the Xbox
right.
booth, they had the game set up to play multiplayer.
And it was so fun in that,
yeah.
you know, for showing it for the first time and being able to play it on the show floor was perfect. So, you know, hopefully we get a chance to get in there and play some.
That's what I'm banking on, man. That's what I'm banking on.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do the rundown.
We'll talk about what we've been up to. A lot of news. To talk about regarding some of our TV shows and a bunch of big releases coming out, game releases coming out over the next month, and some Star Wars news, which is exciting. And then we'll talk about the new mobile game Dungeon Rushers, which I think released today, possibly, or maybe tomorrow.
I think so, yeah.
By the time you hear this, it'll be out. And then I played a game on Xbox called Trulon the Shadow Engine, and excuse me, we'll talk about the pilot for Legion, which just came out. And then maybe we'll talk a little bit about S.H.I.E.L.D. too, because that two-thirds season finale was pretty intense. And then, like I said, since we're going to talk about Mass Effect again, we asked you in our Naquado, since they showed that combat trailer, what sort of character do you think you'll build first in your Mass Effect Andromeda experience? So we're going to talk a little bit about character builds and combat in our Naquado, which is exciting as well.
And shocker, we got a huge response for that question. I knew as soon as we started talking about Mass Effect again, people would go insane.
Going back to the well, man.
Finally.
It's our bread and butter.
Podcast. Yeah. Back to its roots.
Yep.
People are like, they're finally talking about Mass Effect again.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of calling all Pathfinders, announcing the Mass Effect Andromeda Limited Edition Crate and Mystery Crate featuring exclusive Mass Effect Andromeda apparel, collectibles, and more. And the first few orders receive a special bonus gift. You can also head on over to lootcrate.com and subscribe for their regular box that is amazing. And go to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and use the code ratedNA for 10% off your subscription. They are a longtime buddy of the show. We appreciate it. So head on over and buy yourself some loot stuff and get that Mass Effect box.
I think you have to sign up.
I might do it.
I got the previous Mass Effect crate, and I really liked it. I was impressed with what was in the crate. I think there was if I remember correctly, there were some shot glasses. There were a couple pairs of socks. There was a backpack and a N7 hoodie. So I'm sure there was something else too that I'm forgetting, but I mean, those are the big things, but it was pretty awesome. I was really impressed with the crate.
Sweet. Scott, yep. Why don't you just keep going? What have you been up to?
Oh, okay. So I watched the new Ghostbusters movie. I finally got around to seeing it. You guys have seen it, right? I'm assuming.
I have not.
No, you haven't seen it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I have. Oh, wow. I don't, maybe I shouldn't talk about it too much.
No,
but,
go ahead.
Oh, okay. Hang on.
I've been wanting to see it, but it's, you know what happens when children are born. You see like one third of the movies you actually want to see.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to be like controversial, and I'm not going to say, like, I did like the movie, but it wasn't, I didn't find myself laughing out loud a lot. And I kind of feel like that was speaking more to the way that the movie was shot or filmed than like the writing or the characters in the movie. Cause I feel like a lot of the time obviously the main cast is extremely hilarious and very talented. And I just feel like they were put in a lot of situations where it's like, they told them like, you need to stand right here because there's going to be a lot of CG happening around you. And without moving a lot, you still need to be funny. You know what I mean?
Right.
I feel like that happened frequently in the film. But that being said, I think, people have said this many times, but Kate McKinnon kind of steals the entire movie, in my opinion.
She steals everything, man. She's just so phenomenal, Well, she's great in everything she does.
And her character is basically set up to allow her to do that anyways, and it's very effective. And
I feel I've watched it a few times now, mm-hmm. and I feel like on multiple viewings, not that her shtick is bad, but it becomes less, I think, because it's sort of weird and out there and like kind of grabs you while you lose out on some of the other characters. Mm-hmm. And I think the other ones stand up a little taller on multiple viewings and hers falls to the background a little bit. So it's you tune it out almost a little bit. Cause it's, you kind of know the jokes are coming cause they work like the first or second time and maybe not as much, the third or fourth, but so it's still really great. I love the movie. I mean,
interesting. That's an interesting take. I'll probably need to go back and watch it again. Maybe I would see something that I didn't see before.
Yeah, I actually really loved Leslie Jones' performance on multiple viewings. And she's not like my favorite comedian in the world, but Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig obviously are very great. But on multiple viewings, I was like, oh, Leslie Jones is pretty great in this movie. She's really funny. So
yeah. Oh, okay. That's cool. I'll have to watch it again. Yeah. The other thing I'll say about it is that it's definitely set up to be sort of it almost feels like the movie is if you were to go through a portal, like in the TV show Sliders, and you popped out into an alternate universe, and in the alternate universe, like the characters show up and it's like, oh, in this universe, it's the same Ghostbusters movie, but it's all female cast. And it's like, that's cool. You know what I mean? So that being said, it's like, if I was young and I had never seen the original films and I saw this movie for the first time, I would have thought it was like amazing. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But because you already know so much of the lore and so much of the universe, like, they have to retread some ground and it just kind of, but I think by the end it kind of turns into its own thing, which is nice. So anyways, that was kind of like the main thing that I did. I've been playing a bunch of games. I'm just going to briefly mention a couple of them. I'm currently reviewing a game based on the World of Darkness Vampire RPG series or universe or whatever you want to call it.
Nice.
And I got a review code for a game based on Vampire, which I don't remember the name of, but it's a kind of like a narrative adventure game on mobile. So it's kind of told through text messages, sort of in the way that you would play, what's that game, Lifeline, but it's not, you play it all at once. You don't have to, wait for the text messages to come in, but that's kind of how the game plays.
Right.
So I'll talk about that maybe next week once I've had more time to look at it. I sent Matt a code for the same thing, but based off of the Mage universe, which is one of the other kind of realms in the World of Darkness. And I guess Werewolf would be the other one. Is there another realm in World of Darkness? Mage, Werewolf,
Vampire? Yeah, there was Mage, Werewolf, Vampire. There was the ghost one, Wraith.
Oh, Wraith. There was
one other, Mummy. I think. No.
There were mummies, creature, but they were vampires.
There were mummies, but they were like part of other things.
They were part of vampire, yeah.
There was some other world. I don't remember what it was.
I thought, was, Wraith, I thought there was vampire, four. Yeah.
For the main one.
But I mean, the exciting thing about that is that it just sounds like this world is starting to kind of like boot up again, which is exciting. So maybe that means something else will come. Maybe a full console game will come in the future, which is really exciting because the last PC game is almost like a cult classic at this point. You know, the I think it's called Bloodlines or something like that.
Bloodlines.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Dungeon Rushers in our review section, which is a new mobile game that just came out. I'm going to talk about a game called Trulon, the Shadow Engine. Ash, do you want to guess what kind of game this is? It's an indie game.
Is it a puzzle platformer?
No, it's actually a card-based RPG. But I
just
zing you with it.
You tricked me.
Yeah. And then I'm also starting to look at a game called The Inner World, which is also an indie title, but is a point-and-click adventure game, which is all hand-drawn in the style of a sort of like a weird cartoon. So maybe talk about that next week as well. So with that, let's talk to Matt.
Hi.
Hey, what's up,
Hello.
Man?
Hello.
So I, let's see, what have I been up to? I got a new TV, and it's exciting. A giant, it's humongous. It's
I have a question. What does one do with old TV when new TV is purchased? It's because I'm running into this problem. I have TVs all over the place. It's like the fucking Batcave at my house right now.
I live in Brooklyn, so I have friends who do not have TVs through some weird stance of not wanting tech, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And, we have one friend that's a couple that the wife didn't want a TV. She didn't, you know, whatever reason. And then, he does. And, so he is talking his wife into buying our old TV for like $100 or something like cheap. Cause it's still really good TV, but it's just kind of like, I have nowhere to put it at this point.
Isn't I don't that really weird? Know what else to do. Right. Like TVs are almost like disposable, even though they have value, but you can't. You know, you can't sell them. You can't trade them into Amazon or Best Buy. You don't want to put it at the curb because that feels like you're kind of like throwing something away that is functional.
Yeah, right.
I think the last time I was faced with this issue, I just took it to like Salvation Army, you know, and I was like, hey, this still works. You know, I mean, I know I'm not getting anything for it, but I mean, like it, at least it's going somewhere, you know, it'll do some good.
Well, I just use one as my second computer monitor right now.
Oh yeah.
Long time ago. So that's what I'm doing with the old one. But the new one's pretty cool. It's 4K and I upped my Netflix to the 4K thing and watched Abstract, the rest of that documentary series I talked about. I had like two episodes left in that and I watched that in 4K HDR.
Nice, man. That's awesome.
And that was really cool. So did that along with that, because we got the new TV, we decided to move our living room around and paint our kitchen. So my entire 3-day weekend was spent moving. That was a weekend of stuff. So I didn't get to play too many games, but we did watch Legion. I'm caught up completely on the series, but it's, we'll talk about it later. I'm pretty happy. Played a little bit Dungeon Rushers and some other mobile game. And then, also played little bit of the Mage game. I'm glad you're delaying your review because I didn't get through enough of it.
Oh yeah, so, there's just we'll so much to do right now for sure.
And then I also got new headphones because I got this dumb phone without a headphone jack. and I waited. I actually really like the phone, but I waited because Apple had announced this Bluetooth chip called the W1. Had you guys heard about this or no?
No.
So they had this like new Bluetooth technology that, of course, is proprietary to them because they're like the Sony of mobile phones, and they released this chip and it's basically just Bluetooth. So I got this pair of Beats Bluetooth like in-ear headphones,
mm-hmm.
and since they're made by Apple, they have this proprietary chip. And if you were to use it like on any phone that's not the latest iPhone, if you use it, it just kind of works like regular Bluetooth headphones. Okay. But because I have the newest iPhone, it does some really kind of crazy nice stuff. First, the battery life is insane. Like I charge them on occasion just while I'm at work, but they get like 8 to 10 hours of listening time just like without charging. So they sound phenomenal. They sound great.
Huh.
I mean, not like they're not going to match like a $300 pair of headphones, but for $100 and whatever I spent, $100 or $120, I think, which is what I spent on my Bose headphones. Mm-hmm. They sound great. And then what's really cool about them is that you hit the button to turn them on and your phone recognizes the W1 chip. And then it like puts up a picture of your headphones. It's like, oh, are you trying to connect your Beats? And once you claim them to your account, it uses iCloud to like sync those headphones across all your Apple devices.
What?
So like when I got to work, my laptop was like, hey, did you want me to go ahead and set up your Beats headphones? And I said, yeah. And then they were auto connected to that. And it has the ability to connect to like multiple devices so that
that's kind of cool.
At any one point in time, you just say, oh, I'm listening on my computer. It'll use your computer or use your phone, like whichever one you switch it to.
How about that, man?
So
that's
it's
cool.
It's super fast and it works really well. So if you did get an iPhone 7, and you've been holding out on Bluetooth headphones, which I don't blame you for doing. If you look at any of the Beats or those new AirPods, which I'm not sold on, but any of the Beats headphones or the AirPods, the new ones have the W1 chip, and it works really well. Hmm. So a little mini review of some new tech. But how about you, Ash?
Oh, you know, a little bit of Forza Horizon 3.
Oh, that's cool.
And driving some cars real fast around, yeah. Crashing into stuff.
Oh, okay.
You know? Also been watching a show called Legion.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
It's cool. It's kind of weird. Yeah. My wife watched it on mute because I had my headphones on.
Oh.
And
oh, that's cool.
She was very confused. And I've been watching a lot of superhero TV, you know, the CW, Supergirl, Flash.
You're still liking that?
Yeah, I'm still watching those.
I heard Flash punched a gorilla in slow motion.
What?
I actually haven't watched that episode yet, so spoiler alert.
Oh, geez, uh-oh. Sorry.
Oh,
yeah,
Matt,
that's a real big spoiler. Sorry.
Ash hasn't seen that one yet, man. Come on.
Okay. I didn't know what Ash has seen.
We're almost like a week behind in everything, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So.
The old Spawn keeping you from watching TV in real time.
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, it actually took us 3 hours to watch an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to talk about that new episode a little bit later, though, right?
Yes, of course.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I have to talk about
that. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's cool. Anything else?
You know, same old, working, babying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, you guys want to take a break and come back with the news?
Let's get to
Sounds
it.
Sounds good.
All right.
News.
Okay, we're back with some news. The first bit of news is a show that Ash and I are really enjoying, which is Timeless on NBC. And we're getting to the point where we're in our, I don't know, not, it's almost not like mid-season anymore. It's like somehow fall has become the first third, and now prior to spring break is the second third, and then after spring break is the final third. So Timeless, I think, has reached its season finale for the year.
Yeah.
And it is going to be eventually replaced in that time slot with a TV adaptation of Taken, which, sure, whatever.
And, yeah, sure.
And so I think because of that, the ratings currently puts Timeless on the bubble as to whether or not it'll be canceled or renewed. And I read somewhere that depending on the popularity of Taken, that could influence whether or not Timeless gets renewed or not for next year.
I can't imagine Taken's going to do that well, though. It's supposedly, so not supposedly, the numbers on Timeless were that it's gathering about 3.5 million people viewing it, which puts it in like a 0.9 or a 1.1 in the 18 to 49 demo, which is like, okay, it's not great nor horrible. Like it's comparable to, let's see what they've got, some of the ratings here. It's comparable to Quantico and 24 Legacy. Those are all kind of hovering around the same ratings.
Okay, that makes sense.
Shows on the CW do a little worse, but they're also not, I don't think they deal with being the same network level. Mm-hmm. It's not like ABC, NBC, CBS.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's on the bubble, but I don't, it's not like, it's not straight up dying. It's just kind of on the edge of being okay. I could see them bumping it to a new time slot. Maybe.
Like Friday night?
Yeah, the death spot, you know, well, maybe putting it in a Friday night.
I mean, here's another thing that could be helping Timeless at this point. And it's not a one-to-one replacement, but this is the final season of Grimm. So, I mean, that's definitely ending after this season. So there's going to be at least one hole in the schedule that could be filled you know, with this show instead. And it,
yeah,
it's not, I mean, it's obviously not the same, but it's, you know, still the idea of a cast of people doing something sort of supernatural or, you know, science fiction related to help solve crimes and mysteries and stuff like that. So
sure.
Why not?
Sure. I've not watched it, but I don't wish it any ill will, but NBC tends to cancel quicker than some of the other guys. So
yeah, I mean,
we will see what happens to
yeah,
it.
I mean, I just, I wasn't really a big fan of Blindspot, which is shares some of the same folks, as Timeless, yeah. But I really do like the historical perspective of Timeless. And like, I think Ash has said this before, but it's like, I actually feel like I learn things when I watch the show.
Right.
Even if they kind of, you know, bend the rules of time and, you know, there could be, you know, you could make some claims about like what is actually happening with these, you know, with the time machine travel and all that stuff like that. But I mean, if you just kind of focus on what they do with their sets and costumes and the things they go back to and what they explore, like content wise in each of the periods, like you could pick up any episode of the show and not really understand what the big arc is in the story, but still enjoy like what's happening
right.
in each individual episode. So I think for that alone, I hope it gets, picked up again, which would be super cool.
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see. I hope it's renewed though. The next bit of news revolves around something that popped up on NeoGAF regarding someone allegedly got a Nintendo Switch and then started
early.
Yes, much very.
They didn't
early.
Allegedly get it. They definitely
got it. It was allegedly either stolen shipped to them early.
Their claim was that it was a shipping accident that they ended up with a Switch early before everybody else can get it.
Right, and so they started posting videos online of the various menu systems because there were no games that they had with the system at the time. So what do you know about this?
Did you watch the video at all or no?
I saw that they were like screens of the menus and stuff, and I didn't really see the need to watch the video. So
we talked about it a little bit in Slack. So part of the thing he said in the video is that he didn't turn on his network capability, so he didn't get on online with
as
it,
you should not,
because he was afraid he was afraid they would tank it because it's not supposed to be out yet.
Oh, they'll absolutely do that. Yeah, that was a smart idea. Yeah,
and then he might end up with, because if it is all true and it's a shipping accident, they got it early, you know, they're not going to send him a new one if he tanks it because he got it early. They're probably going to not do anything with it. Mm-hmm. So the thing that we talked briefly about in Slack that caught my eye so much is that it is like straight up Android UI.
Oh,
like,
is it? Really?
Oh God. Yeah. Like it's the keyboard, like the menus, the modals, the stuff that like pops in and out on the screen is like, it is an Android device. And that leads me to believe that while we thought they were borrowing Shield tech, right? Like the NVIDIA Shield stuff, mm-hmm. they appear to be very much using an Android device and skinning it with Nintendo. Now, I'm sure they have like torn up. I'm sure it is not an Android, straight up build of Android. But man, either they're borrowing design wise from them really heavily, or they are just like, or they just put Nintendo. They built like an emulator on top of Android. I don't know. But it is very much Android. And what's confusing about that is, if it is Android, if they really just kind of reused an old build of Android and forked it into some kind of Nintendo OS, then like, why the heck do they not have Netflix or Hulu or, you know, like there's some, it just seems like they would have had easy wins there. They could have easily onboarded like partners if this is at all Android tech below it. So
we talked about this a little bit, but if I had to take a guess as to why these things are not going to be available on day one, I honestly think there's probably some weird Nintendo cultural reason why they don't want those things to be there on day one.
Yeah. I wouldn't argue that. Yeah. And there's like, also like that weird secretiveness of like,
yes,
they didn't want this device to be anywhere but in Nintendo headquarters. So,
and I'm thinking that like maybe as people were, you know, whatever like their think tank is, and they have some weird culture surrounding the device, they were probably just like, they probably have some weird bizarre reason, you know, like they do for everything,
just so weird because it's like it's as if they're still operating in the world where there's just Nintendo and Sega, you know what I mean, and like they don't have to think about anything else, when it's like this device especially, while it may be very like paradigm shifting for console gaming, it is not a paradigm shift in the sense of what that device is. Like, they have moved directly into where iPads or Surfaces or like, you know, Android devices sit, like the Shield. They're moving right into known territory in other areas, and they're moving it with their brand. But it's like, I just don't, it's such like a blind move to me to just go like, well, we don't need this stuff at launch because we're Nintendo and we'll have Zelda. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
I think they don't want it at launch. I think they want people to, I think they're like someone's, you know, at the high levels going like, first and foremost, this is a game, you know, it'll be translated from Japanese, so it'll sound very elegant. And they'll be like, first and foremost, this is a game system, and we want gaming to be at the center of the experience of the Switch. There'll be some really, you know, like
right,
idealistic reasoning behind why there are no apps. And then by the time holiday rolls around and they're putting out bundles and all this other stuff, like, they'll probably release those apps. And, you know, if there's a web browser or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, I understand that logic side of it, but what I'm saying is that it's a very blind move to think that you don't need it. Like,
sure.
Or to think that the focus should be that you're a gaming device, which should be the focus, but like, not when you're selling a device that's the same cost as somebody going to buy an iPad Air 2 that can play games and, you know, do write documents on it and read Facebook and, you know, like, that device is just, they've moved into such a competition level with that stuff that, like, if you're going to spend $450 on a gaming tablet, you now have to think about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it won't be an instant win for Nintendo if you at all might want to take this thing and watch Netflix while you're in a hotel. Like, it's just very confusing to me. I don't know. It's very Nintendo. You're right. Like, I understand it. It's the same as if, like, when Apple calls removing a headphone jack courageous, it's like a line right. of bullshit that you see right through immediately. But, like, it's just so weird for a company that is seemingly sort of struggling and needs to get a foothold in gaming to do, like, they could have not only had their brand, but had the backing of like everything that would be available on that platform. And now it's like, they're just really hoping you want Zelda real bad in 720 or whatever the running in.
I mean, you could be also completely right in the sense that they just didn't want to let those kits leak out early to, you know, that maybe they wanted to control that as much as possible. And just restrict that to development, game development initially, and then maybe they'll send out those kits to other places. But showing the menu screens online, saying you got one early, like, makes no difference. That person's not going to play anything that anyone else is going to be able to see. So it's not really...
I mean, I think it's neat that we all got to kind of see it. It does move real smooth. It's like, it works really well. It's clearly like a well-made machine. It looks really nice. It's weirdly sort of smaller looking than I expected it, than I had envisioned in my head, but... It's not that I didn't know what the size was. I think I just hadn't really put together what that size meant, I guess. But I mean, you know, I guess that's what's frustrating is, like, I like new tech and this stuff is very exciting to me. And to me, this thing could have been like when Microsoft decided to get in the hardware game and made the Surface. And you're like, all of a sudden a company makes a really nice looking piece of hardware that does a bunch of things or is really cool. And then you're like, oh, yeah, that's exciting. Like, this is really neat. And instead, it was just like, we put out a brand new Zelda machine. And, you know, and you're like, wait, what? Like, okay. It just is, it confused me. So,
no, I feel you.
I don't know.
I feel you. Let's move on. We got a lot of other stuff to get to. So today, actually, this is a good timing. They announced the Games with Gold for March on Xbox. Yep. If you're a Xbox Gold member, it's kind of
tweet about.
Kind of interesting lineup. For Xbox One proper, you will get Layers of Fear, which is a game I really liked, an indie title, a horror title. Mm-hmm. And then the second half of March, you'll get the Ultimate Edition of Evolve, which I assume comes with all of the DLC and everything. So that's kind of interesting, too. We talked about that game a long time ago. I think it's just really hard. It's a great concept, and we played it at PAX a few times, but... I think it's just really hard to get.
We played it at home too a few times, didn't we?
Yeah, we played like betas and stuff like that. But I think it's just really difficult to get a team of four people to work together against a team of one person who only needs to work with themselves, you know?
Right.
And so I think the game had great potential, but we just had some trouble getting a team together to be efficient, because I think that's the hardest part. And then on Xbox 360, backwards compatible, you're going to get Borderlands 2. Which is, like, at this point, I don't know who doesn't own some version of Borderlands 2. Like,
right.
You know, we've played that game for, like, probably over 100 hours, like, each. You know, like, it's ridiculous. And then another title called Heavy Weapon, which I assume is probably an arcade title, but you know, free is free. It's a PopCap game. Heavy Weapon. Actually, if it's Heavy Weapon PopCap, that might actually be in the vault already. So really, it's probably just Layers of Fear and Evolve, and the other two games are, you know, Borderlands 2 is great, but I think everybody who wants it probably has it already. So
I have it, but I still have never beaten it. I've never even really played much of it because they tanked the soloing.
Oh, really? Borderlands 2? You didn't play with us? I thought we played. You weren't part of that?
Nope.
Every Thursday?
I think I was like, it came out. Something was going on in my life at that time. Oh. I don't remember what it was, but I did not get to play when you guys were playing. And so I attempted to solo it as the sniper like I did in 1.
Oh, yes.
And it was like near impossible. Like you just couldn't, you would just get murdered over and over again.
Not that we need anything else to play, but if you ever wanted to play Borderlands 2, I'm actually one achievement short of 100%ing that game. And it's the
How do you live with yourself, Scott?
Oh, because I played that game so many times, I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And I think a save file I had got corrupted, and I think that's what shot me down.
Hey guys, I'm back.
Hey, welcome back.
What? Hi.
Hey,
thanks.
Your voice changed since the news segment.
I heard I had an interloper, a doppelganger came and posed as me.
Yeah,
I mean it sounded pretty similar, but
yeah.
We didn't even know you were gone, really.
Oh, good. That's what I'd love to hear.
Yeah, obviously we already know what you've been up to, and we're talking about quickly talking about Games with Gold.
Yeah, nice.
Which is, you know, Evolve, which, you know, we talked about at length in previous episodes, but
yeah, that was long ago. One of our games of PAX.
Yeah, one of our games of PAX.
I think like 2015 or something.
Yeah, and it just was never meant to be for us, but everyone will be able to play it now, so there could be more numbers.
Good. Good,
In greater numbers. And then the last thing I have to mention before we talk about some game releases is that the home release for Rogue One Star Wars Story has been dated. So on...
Is it like the same day as Mass Effect?
Kinda, yeah. It kinda is.
Yeah, it's like the digital release is the same day as Mass Effect.
I feel like that's probably the only thing that I would stop playing Mass Effect to do is to watch Rogue One again, so that's not too bad,
right?
But it comes out true. it'll hit digital on March 24th, and it'll hit Blu-ray on April 4th,
2 weeks later.
I at this point I think my preference is to get the digital release just because of Disney movies everywhere. So basically what that means is that anytime you buy a digital version of a Disney film and you have your various digital platform accounts linked through Disney, you will get all of those things that you purchase on all of those other platforms. So for example, if you go onto the Windows Store and buy a copy of WALL-E digitally, if your Xbox Windows account is linked to Disney Movies Anywhere and your Amazon Prime or your Amazon Video account is also linked, you can load up Amazon Video and your WALL-E movie will also be there as well. So to me, that's kind of a no-brainer, just being able to know that no matter where, what outlet I buy the movie on, it'll be available on all the other outlets. I think that's just kind of Disney flexing their, you know, muscle and just saying like, hey, you're going to get these things everywhere. Like, you don't have to rebuy.
That's awesome.
Them.
Now, yeah. I bought episode 7. Mm-hmm. I guess I bought it through Xbox. Would that still work? It'll still work?
Yeah, so if you all you need to have is you go to Disney Movies Anywhere, you link your relevant accounts to that service, and then it will cross.
I'll link my Xbox Live account, and then basically I'll have access. Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, so any accounts that you link to Disney will cross-populate all of your Disney movie purchases, digital purchases, throughout the other platforms. So
ooh, that's so cool. I love that.
Yeah, so basically, like, I think I ended up buying the movie on the Windows Store. I've watched it on Amazon Video. I think I watched it on Xbox 360 once or twice. And so it's just kind of a cool thing. I don't think it works with every single service, but it works with enough of them. You should be able to get pretty much complete coverage on every device that you have, depending on what kind of like digital accounts you have. So
here comes negative Matt, but it's a step in the right direction.
Uh-huh.
But like, it's just... it really still bums me out that when you buy digitally that you don't own it. You're leasing
correct
permanently.
Mm-hmm.
So like It's just, I don't know. It's just a bummer still. That is like closer to the way it should be, which is you've bought it so you can kind of watch it wherever you bought it, mm-hmm. you know, or wherever you want to, rather. So that is like way better than having it on like Vudu, which isn't on Amazon, which isn't on like Windows. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you get in weird states where you've got movies kind of all over the place. But it still sort of bums me out that it's not like buying MP3s or something, where you're just buying the piece of content and it is yours and you can move it to whatever device you want to move it to. Yep. You can do whatever you want with it. It's just your content to own in whatever way you want to own it. Instead, you're buying it to lease from Disney, essentially, until they decide that they don't want you to have it digitally anymore.
Yeah,
which sounds like, and it's like, not, I don't know if Disney was the ones who did it, but Amazon has lost like deals with other producers before. And then those movies have just disappeared from people's libraries and they eventually got them back. But it's like, that's the kind of BS that happens, and it just really bothers me. So hopefully this is like a good baby step, and it'll just keep going that direction and keep going and keep going, and then eventually we just own the content we purchase, which is what it should be.
Yeah, I mean, world, I guess, so. You know, my kind of reasoning behind that, the counter argument is that the problem with Star Wars in particular, and we've seen this before, is that, and actually Disney does this too now, like, is that all those Disney movies came out on VHS in those clamshell mm-hmm. boxes that were collectible, mm-hmm. and then they came out on DVD, and then they went into the mm-hmm. vault, the quote-unquote vault, and then they came out again on Blu-ray on, like, Super Platinum Edition.
Yeah.
And so with Star Wars, like, I still have a copy of Phantom Menace on VHS tape. And, you know what I mean? Like, so I have to buy it on
the
DVD.
Best Star Wars.
The best one, obviously, because, I mean, we all know that Jar Jar Binks now is the
Sith Lord,
the Phantom Menace, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like you'll have to rebuy that movie, like on many multiple types of platforms, and you'll do it because you want it, right? So,
and not even like multiple platforms, but like I ended up with this with like Marvel movies, where I owned Iron Man and I think Thor on Blu-ray or something, mm-hmm. or Avengers on Blu-ray, and then like they put out the, you know, the set. And like, I'm the dumbass that has the fucking briefcase and the ball from Guardians. Like,
yeah,
the super secret, awesome, you know, $200 set or whatever. Like, and then I end up buying that. And same with Star Wars. Like, I had the original set of movie, like 4 through 6. And I think I owned 2 also or something weird like that. And then I bought the 4 through or 1 through 6, and then like now I'm just waiting on 7 because I'm like, well, I know I'm gonna get the whole thing on whatever new media form we're on when we get there. So I
know, and then like now there's like, you know, 4K like Blu-rays, and like how many different SKUs for like Harry Potter on Blu-ray do you think there are? You know what I mean? Like that movie gets re-released like
right.
death.
But I mean, I think we
own it like 3 times. Yeah. It's like ridiculous.
Yeah,
but I think physical media is dying so quickly. I mean, you know, I don't think in 10 years there's going to be a Blu-ray type format. I think it's going to be gone in a decade, and I think everything will all be digital just because, you know, hard drives will be so big. It's such a ridiculous, you know, why would you ever have
It would just be nice media. To own it, though. I think that's what my
that's
point
what
is.
I'm saying. Like that, right, like, that's the fear there, is that like when they do get rid of digital media, when they get rid of physical media, when they're like Blu-ray, they stop making Blu-ray players or whatever the next format is possibly, like the fear there is that you don't actually own any of the content you've purchased from these people. So it's like now we just don't own content, and we're in the weird world where we're just like streaming things. It gets to like, it's just, I don't know. It's future thinking of like how things suck for music now, because like everybody uses Spotify and Spotify doesn't pay artists. And then like the music business has been gutted essentially. And it's like the movie business is trying to get out ahead of that, but in ways that I think are not pro consumer. So
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see what pans out. This is not at all what we were going to talk about. So anyways, but
what else?
But yeah. So I mean, whatever. I'll be watching Rogue One a million times. I'll probably buy it digitally. It's fine.
I think you'll have to buy it digitally so you could see it right away. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
That's the catch, right? Is that you'll get access to it a week early. So
yeah,
that's where you'll be.
All right, so we all got a review copy, all three of us, of a game called Dungeon Rushers for iOS, which is being published by Miklos.
Yep.
One of our favorite French studios.
Probably just favorite studios, but yeah. French studios, yeah. Too.
But we are French.
But we do like the French studios.
Telling our listeners. Yeah, I really do like French studios, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, what is that? That's like Game awesome Bakers, stuff. Don't Nod, right?
Yeah, like the developer's actually a studio called Goblins Studios, and they are based, I want to say, out of France as well. So Goblins Studios and Miklos Publishing, and Dungeon Rushers is a cool, how would you guys describe this? So it actually has it's a tactical RPG, turn-based tactical RPG, where you take your character deep into dungeons and you explore and find loot and treasure. But it's very tongue-in-cheek. It's kind of one of those more comedic takes on your typical pen and paper RPG. It's more Final Fantasy-esque. Mm-hmm. So it's, you have your squad on one side, the enemy squad on the other side. You wait for your turn meter to kind of tick over. Then you choose your attack and a variety of different heroes to unlock and to discover. The thing that I thought was pretty neat is that they all have different personalities, which I thought was really fun. I'm not a big fan of like comedic RPGs. It just doesn't ever really land with me personally. I'm never like, laughing out loud at the humor in, I think for a comedy in games to like work, it has to just be really, really good. And, the comedy didn't land with me with Dungeon Rushers, but the systems did. I did really like the fact that a lot of the characters have passive abilities you can use in dungeons. For instance, the accountant Thorgrim, who's like this dwarven kind of tank character, he has a passive ability where he can actually dive through traps. If you find traps in dungeons and trigger the traps and take the damage on just him rather than the whole party. And then the main character, who is a thief type character, can disarm traps and can also do like a scouting ability where he uncovers grids in the map, so you can kind of plan out your attack a little bit more. I feel like there's a lot of depth here, and I spent I want to say maybe 3 to 4 hours with the game, but they say that the campaign is over 20 hours in length, which is pretty awesome. And there's also a builder as well. So I didn't get into the builder, but if you wanted to, you can actually construct your own dungeons and stuff like that. Yeah,
that's kind of like I think that's what ends up being the end game, or maybe like the other part of the game as you're completing the campaign. Because what I started to see is that the game sort of becomes punishingly difficult very quickly. And I think that the reason for that is that the game wants you to maybe start to replay some of the harder levels over and over again, so that you kind of like level up your characters as you do that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of materials to find in the dungeon, so you could use that to do crafting, to build new items for your characters. And your characters have like, some ridiculous like 7 or 8 different slots to equip things in. So I can see the game over time becoming very highly customizable. And so the thing that you mentioned is almost like the multiplayer component of the game, which is asynchronous multiplayer. And what I think is really cool for a game like this, like you said, is that you eventually reach a point within the campaign where you can build your own dungeon, which is kind of cool, because a lot of the dungeons in the game are like appear to be like semi randomly generated. Mm-hmm. But you can create a dungeon, which the components that are available to you are the same ones that are available in the dungeons that you participate in. But then as you kind of like level up during the game, you will be able to make your dungeons more complex, more challenging, add different kinds of elements to the dungeons. And so the idea being is that once you build your dungeon, you can allow other people in the community to come attack you. And whether they're successful or not, I think you will gain like some points based off of that, which you can then use to either upgrade your multiplayer dungeon or upgrade your campaign like characters. So there appear to be 2 kinds of currency in the game, but I haven't seen any in-app purchases other than some character skins, which are, cosmetic only. So it would seem like it's meant to be played kind of like over and over and over again because the game is so difficult, but you're meant to kind of slowly grind your way through getting enough money to buy more items or get more materials to build some armor and weapons and stuff like that, so you can become more powerful to progress through the dungeons. And then, you know, each dungeon appears to have two different difficulty levels. So progressing through the dungeons, you're presented with challenges to complete as you do it. And then once you complete the three challenges for a particular level in the campaign, it unlocks like a heroic mode of that, which I would assume is a harder difficulty level with additional challenges. So I see a lot of replay ability in the game. My only particular complaint with the game is that I feel like the UI is very small for a mobile device. And I didn't play on a tablet, but I feel like on a tablet, it would be easier to do things like building your dungeon and interacting with some elements. But my hands
were... I found the UI to be small as well, even on my tablet. So, yeah. And you know, I know this game exists on Steam as well for PC.
Oh, that makes a lot more sense.
So I'm assuming that it was just sort of a, I don't want to say a porting issue, because I'm sure there's huge differences between the PC version and the iOS version, but I'm sure they just kind of moved some of the UI over and didn't bother changing it too much. So some of it was harder to see, and I totally agree with that. But
it's a really deep game though. I mean, I think for, you know, if you can, for me, if I, you know, if you can look past the small UI, you could spend dozens and dozens of hours like crafting a dungeon and like grinding away through the campaign and just really having a lot of fun while you're doing it. So I mean, I thought it was a pretty cool game, but I just don't know particularly that it's for me, just because I would only be able to play on my phone. So,
right.
I think it's really cool though. I think it's a really great game.
No, I like it. I think there's a lot to it. I think the thing that I'm starting to notice in general about, iOS games is that, finally, we're getting to the point where we're getting like real games, and we're not just getting like endless runners. Mm-hmm. We're getting games with like real depth and that are actually utilizing, you know, the touch technology for the right reasons. I feel like if you're looking for an awesome RPG on the go, I definitely recommend Dungeon Rushers. The humor didn't land with me, but I'm like an old curmudgeon, so it might really be funny for other people. So I think, yeah, I say definitely check it out, either of course on iOS or on Steam. Let us know. I know it's I don't know what the price is on iOS right now, but the Steam version is $15. I'm assuming that it's similarly priced on iOS.
And I believe, I mean, it might be too late by the time this episode comes out, but I think at least for the launch window, they're giving away those character skins for free. So if you can get to the game before that happens, then you'll
Definitely check out Dungeon Rushers. I give it a thumb.
A thumb?
Thumb.
It's good.
It's a thumb.
Okay. Let's see. The next game we're going to talk about
is how we review stuff? Just with a thumb?
Yeah.
Whether it gets a thumb or not.
Typically, okay. We don't rate things on this show, but I think you can...
Unrated NA. Yeah, we've been over this.
Yeah, choose whatever.
Rated NA that we don't actually rate anything.
Well, I mean, I think we...
We should have put thought into this name, guys. It's been seven years. We should have maybe...
Wait, I thought it was stood for rated not available.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Is that why the ESRB came after us?
That is why the ESRB came after. We never talked...
We never talked about that.
Brand confusion. Anyways.
I was too good at my job.
Yeah, right? And, you know, since then, I've seen other not outlets necessarily. But okay, anyways, we're getting...
Go for the little guy.
Straying way off the path. But anyways, the next game we're going to talk about is called Trulon, the Shadow Engine, which is currently available for Xbox. I think was previously available on iOS and Steam as well, and Google Play. But this game is from, let's see, it is published by Head Up Games, and is, I think the developer is KYY Games. So I think they're a German developer. But anyways, Trulon is based off of, I believe, an existing IP, which is I want to say like a some kind of show on television, as well as a book. And so it uses that source material to create a game, which is sort of like an RPG, but it uses a really interesting card battling system to flesh out the combat. And so for me, that's kind of the highlight of the game. So you guys, one of you guys played Hand of Fate, right? The game with the
Ashton.
Loved it.
Okay, well, it's not exactly like that, but if you like that concept of, you know, playing through a game in which you acquire cards which kind of dictate the type of combat that you can do, That's kind of what happens in Trulon. But, you know, this game is more of an RPG. Hand of Fate was more of an action game. So in this game, you basically acquire cards. You assign cards to different characters in your party. And then, you know, those party members in like sort of a turn-based combat system will get a hand of cards from which they can play different tactics and abilities and things like that to attack the other enemies. So that part is pretty cool. The art in this game looks really nice. The characters all appear to be hand-drawn. And I mean, you can clearly tell that there's like source material for this game because they're, you know, the world appears to be much more fleshed out than what you would expect from an indie game, because they're talking about like everything that's happening in this world and, you know, two different like kind of regions of this world that are, you know, engaged with one another and in different kinds of, like turmoil, if you will. And that kind of is what sets the story of the game into motion. I really like the characters in the party that you pick up are all very different and interesting. The archetypes are kind of like your standard fare for RPGs. You know, there's like a healer, there's a combat mage, there is a tank, and then someone who's like primarily focused on combat. But then again, the using a card system kind of opens up some interesting possibilities that really is more kind of conducive to like what you would see in a card game. So like in a card game, a typical strategy is to like allow yourself to take additional actions or to increase your hand size to get more cards onto the battlefield at once. And so this game kind of leverages some things like that, which are pretty cool. So this game is available now, I believe. I think it actually came out today on Xbox. And so I have an interesting kind of like recommendation for this game. And that is, I would probably say maybe wait and see, because at the time of this recording, to the best of my knowledge, there are some bugs in the game that may prohibit you from either completing the entire game or some of the a handful of quests, maybe one or two quests in the game. So,
Okay.
And I think
frustrating.
I know. I think that might be due to a porting issue, because from what I've looked at on Steam, these issues appear to have been fixed, possibly. And if this game originally started on mobile, then you know, there'd probably be better success there. So I think I don't want to just say that the game is like bad or that the bugs kind of like make the game unplayable, but I would probably say if you're looking at this game for Xbox, I might take a little bit of caution in just making sure that like this game is going to be updated to fix some of the things that are apparently wrong with the game from what I saw, because I do believe at this point you may not be able to complete the game.
Okay. That's not good.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, if you are interested in this game, I would probably say maybe look at it on Steam or iOS first. And then of course, if the game gets patched up maybe sometime it was just released. So if it gets patched up by, you know, within the next week or so, then absolutely take a look at it. But, you know, again, it's available on multiple platforms, and you know, what you see on Xbox regarding some of those issues is not not apparent on mobile from what I've read online. So again, good game, might not be the right platform right now. I'm going to wait and see if those things are fixed. I'll mention it on additional podcast, but I just want to make people aware of the fact that, like, you know, I don't want to tell you to like go and get it and then you find out that you can't complete the game.
Right.
I'm just kind of trying to be honest, but the game is good, but unfortunately some of the things under the hood are preventing me from making it a strong recommendation. But still a good game as far as the mechanics go and the art and stuff like that.
And please, someone use the name Shadow Engine for a new metal band name.
The Shadow Engine? Yeah, that's kind of hot. Yeah, right? Yeah, that's a great name.
Pretty good.
You guys hear the latest Shadow Engine? Whoa.
Yeah.
I love it.
So Ash and I, right, Scott? Correct. Did you watch this?
I did not.
Ash and I watched the new show Legion, which is a take on a mutant character out of the X-Men New Mutants universe from Marvel, named Legion. We'd heard about the show coming a little while ago, and I think both of us had pretty low expectations of what this would be. A, because I don't think either one of us were huge fans of the character. And then B, just the X universe, I think, in my opinion at least, is not the most stellar on movie and TV. I don't usually generally love everything they've done with it. So I kind of was like had already thrown this one under the rug and not really thought about it. Then it came out and was getting reviewed like crazy well. And I thought, well, that's weird. So I downloaded it, grabbed it on the old Amazon and watched it. And the thing that got me was I didn't realize this is directed and written by a guy named Noah Hawley, who did the Fargo redo on FX a little while ago, which was very good and crazy well reviewed all over the place. And I think even won some awards. So it did not come from like a no name. This is a guy who kind of came out of nowhere with a show last year or 2 years ago and blew that out of the water. So this one takes place in sort of an unknown time period. It stars a guy named Dan Stevens as David Holler, who is the lead character Legion, Rachel Keller, Aubrey Plaza, who else is in it? Hamish Linklater, Katie Hazelton. It's a pretty good, strong cast. And it follows the story of a guy who is in what is essentially a mental hospital dealing with having had a few mental breaks, right? I guess is the best way to, sort of put it. And what the show does for you right away, and the thing I will compare it to if you watched it, is Mr. Robot, in the sense that they set up a narrator who is untrustworthy, like immediately. So your lead character, Legion, is basically losing grip or has lost grip on reality and is being interviewed about events that have happened and is trying to recall them, and things are popping in and out of those events that are either real or fake in his brain or not, and there's no way for us to really know the true order of events or truly what is going on in this time. I surprisingly legitimately loved it. I thought I was blown away. First of all, it's gorgeous. Like, the show is shot beautifully. There's scenes in it that are like, just effects has just got to be dumping money into this show. I can't imagine how much some of that stuff cost. And then the acting is great. Aubrey Plaza is fantastic in it as this kind of,
I had no idea she was even in it.
Crazy character.
It. And yeah. I loved her in it.
Dan Stevens, the guy who plays Legion, is fantastic. I thought he was really great all the way through. Rachel Keller, who plays a character named Sid Barrett, is fantastic. Like, I was absolutely floored by this show. And it is single-handedly saving the X universe for me on TV and movies. Although I think, I'll be honest, I have a feeling that it is completely detached from any other X movie or show that exists. I don't think that they're in the same quote-unquote universe, although we can talk about how Legion breaks that all over the place. But Ash, what were kind of your initial thoughts? This was all we are talking about right now is the extended pilot. I saw the second episode, which came out last week. Ash hasn't seen that yet, so
yeah, I kind of want to mirror a lot of the things you said, so without repeating it all, I'll just say that I went in not liking the character. Listeners to the show know that I grew up with the X-Men, and this was sort of my bread and butter as a kid, Claremont era. Loved the X-Men, and never was a fan of Legion just because the character was way too out there. And, you know, little 10-year-old Ash was like, Legion is just way too OP. You know, Legion, yeah. Like, Legion had literally access to 1,000 different powers. Every personality that he had a different ability. And I just thought it was just like, it was just too crazy. And the books he was in, a lot of them took place in the astral plane. And it was like a little bit too much for me as a young, you know, so pre-teen reader, right?
Sorry to interrupt, but did you read the New Mutants run? Because I did not when I was little.
I knew him
from the X-Men run.
Yeah, I read his first appearance and all that stuff. That was right about the time where I was really big into, you know, Claremont era stuff, and the New Mutants were kicking around. So, you know, I was familiar with Legion, I think, from the very beginning when he was first introduced. But like I said, I never liked him. So I wasn't really excited about this show. But this is hands down the best Fox mutant property, you know, superhero property that has ever been made. And it's better than any of the X films. It's better than anything. It's absolutely stunning. It's surreal. The music is just phenomenal. It's more of an experience, you know. Even if you just watch the pilot, it that alone will be enough to satisfy you. Like, it's a great little story. You know, just for the first pilot episode. So really intriguing, really exciting. The effects are gorgeous. Like when he actually starts to realize that he can use his powers, it's like devastating and terrifying. And you kind of understand why people fear mutants, because this guy is like, you know, there's Professor X level and he's like beyond Professor X level of power. So it's kind of, you know, staggering. He's like right under like Dark Phoenix, you know?
Yeah.
So it's really, really cool. And, you know, I highly recommend it. Like the last thing I really wanted was to add another superhero show to like my growing list of superhero shows that I watch on a weekly basis. Cause that's like at this point, almost all that I watch.
Right.
But it is really well done. And I just question if they can keep up the level of quality on a week to week basis, as they inevitably have to change directors and so on and so forth. I don't know if they'll be able to maintain that tone and style.
Right.
I guess some shows do, like Game of Thrones typically does. Like, you know, they have some episodes that are just standout, but most of the time the tone carries over from episode to episode. But
so I will say Noah Hawley wrote the whole season. So the writers are not changing out. It's the main guy who wrote it. The second episode is directed by a different guy, and it was equally as stunning. Like,
Good.
Still fantastic, and they do even weirder shit in the second episode, if that tells you anything. So they start to go into memories and do stuff with that is very weird and disturbing, and the show just keeps tipping further and further into the deep end, and it is it's truly like I'm as excited about this show now as I was when I started this first season of Mr. Robot. Like it's like I'm so excited that this exists like in my life.
Yeah, and it kind of came out of left field, right? Like it's this character that is like D tier, like X-Men character. It'd be like if we got like a freaking like Wolvesbane show that was just like the best thing you've ever seen in your life, or like, you know, like or Cypher or some
basically any of the New Mutants here.
Yeah, pretty much.
So this actually, a side note on this that I was going to recommend to our listeners. Yeah, so if it's not clear, Ash and I are both heavily recommending this show. It is very, very, very good. But as a side note, it made me go back and pick up the New Mutants run, the initial run that Chris Claremont and Bill Sienkiewicz did for Legion when he first appears, which is
early 20s or 30s.
Right? Yeah, it's issue 25 through issue 28 is his like initial appearance.
Was that like 89 or something crazy? Like that?
Yeah, it might even be earlier than that. It might be. Yeah.
Jesus.
86 or 7. So to give it a little bit of backstory, Claremont had already done a huge run on the X-Men, had basically made a giant name for himself at this point, right? He was the Marvel X-Men guy at this point, and spun off New Mutants. Is this correct? I feel like that's the timeline.
Yeah, that's right.
And so New Mutants was his chance to kind of start fresh, which is ironic because it's also a story about Charles Xavier starting fresh with the X-Men. So I started picking up and reading it, and Bill Sienkiewicz is a painter by trade, wasn't traditionally a comic book illustrator. And we talked briefly on Slack about it, Ash, but these books are gorgeous on a level of like they do not look of the time that they were made. They look timeless in a sense. And the run is actually pretty good as an adult. Like, it makes a lot more sense. The jumping in and out of realities is easier to follow, I feel like, than when I read some of the Legion stuff as a kid. So I just wanted to throw that in there to recommend. They're near impossible to find. I think you can buy them on Comixology, which is what I did. But otherwise, I don't know how you would get your hands on it. But there are collected trades, but weirdly enough, they split them so that the like volume 3 and 4 both have the Legion run in it. Like, they split it in the middle of the Legion run instead of letting you complete that timeline or that series and pick up the next one. So, but if you were looking to read some comics or you wanted some precursor before you watch Legion, the TV show, reading those New Mutants issues are really good. They're They're easier to follow as an adult, and they give a little bit of background to the show. Although I'll be dead honest with you, I don't think you need it at all.
I don't think you do either.
Fantastic. So Legion on FX. I can't recommend it enough, and it sounds like you can't either.
Yeah, it was good stuff. Check it out. Yeah. spoiler time.
So we can do this briefly with a little bit of spoilers, right? I think we're just all excited about this show, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I want to talk about it a little bit just to kind of see, you know, what you guys think. So I guess we will say we're going to be talking about the second arc, the life model decoy, the end of the second arc of season, what is this, four? four or five?
It's hard to tell.
I don't remember what season we're in. I'm terrible.
It's hard to tell just the way they segment all the runs.
Right. You know? Yeah. So we're talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., latest season, the life model decoy arc, the last episode. So we're going to be talking about that just for a few minutes.
Good and season we'll four. Good job, man. Jeez.
Yeah. I couldn't remember for a second, but I think that's right. Yeah.
No, you're right.
So I'll start off by saying this was, I think, my favorite episode of the show ever. And there's a couple reasons why. This was the first episode that that Jed Whedon ever directed, and he's one of the showrunners. He's never directed before, so this is the first, I think, thing he's ever directed. And so he wrote the episode as well. He's been with the cast from the beginning. They're very, very comfortable with him, and I think he brought out the best performances of the actors that I think I've seen. So, you know, I think the Fitzsimmons stuff in this episode was just unbelievable and kind of scary.
Yes.
So, I guess the brief synopsis is if you've been watching the season, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. have been slowly been replaced by life model decoys or I guess robots with nefarious intent. And the last episode ended with the agents or Fitz and Simmons not knowing apparently or finding out that that four life model decoys had been replaced, had replaced the lead members of S.H.I.E.L.D. And so you kind of left in this cliffhanger. And then when this episode picks up, it becomes sort of like this survival horror story for an hour, which is crazy. Just crazy. Yeah. Yeah. So what did you guys think of the episode?
I would say like, I agree with you. I don't know, because my memory's not too good, but if it's not the best, it's definitely one of the best episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D. I do agree that the performances in the episode are great. I also think that as far as the episode composition goes, it probably has the most varied stuff in the episode. So there's really great action sequences. There are, you know, characters that use their powers in the action sequences that you don't get to see. I mean, because the fighting this season has been great, but you don't always get to see a lot of fighting with powers, and you get to see that in this episode. So you get to see some kind of like more supernatural type combat, which is great. You get to see like some very touching moments. There's like thrilling moments or stuff that's scary, stuff that will, you know, confuse you or make you think. So I think just as the episode as a whole, there's really just a lot of stuff to chew on. And it would be an episode that you could finish and go like, you know what? I want to go back and watch that one again, because maybe I missed something the first time through. And I really, you know, overall, as far as this entire season four has gone, I really appreciate the fact that, they're giving Gemma sort of like an expanded role on the team. And it's almost a role that makes her separate from Fitz. So they, you know, for the longest time, they were like the same person.
Yeah, that's true.
As far as a character goes, and they kind of made them different people now, which is nice because they have different functions within S.H.I.E.L.D. They're like different ranks within S.H.I.E.L.D. And I think that really works to their advantage. And it certainly works to their advantage, like in the last few episodes, including this one too. Without getting too spoilery, I mean, the episode is sort of Gemma heavy, which is like fantastic. And it's just nice to see her getting, you know, some attention, because a lot of the time the attention is focused on, you know, Daisy, Coulson, May and stuff like that. So it's nice to kind of like let her shine a little bit in the episode. So I thought that was really nice as well. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I think this was definitely easily one of the better episodes of recent memory. Although I liked some of the Ghost Rider stuff. I really liked the guy who played Ghost Rider.
Yeah, he was really good. Yep.
I think overall the show was great. The combat has been fantastic for sure. The powers look a lot better. I think the things that I have been dissatisfied with in the past were somewhat unfair to an extent, because it's like I just wanted more of it to be either like to either go dark or to stay goofy and fun and light. And it was like hard. I think they kind of waffled between trying to figure out what they were going to do for a while. And then like when this season started, or this third of the season started. I kind of wanted it to get more heady than it did. But I think that's an unfair want necessarily, because it's a network show and it's not like, you know, it's not Legion on FX, like buried somewhere in your cable channel. It's like a regular network show on a very normal time in the middle of the week. But I thought overall the episode was really great. They did two things that I have historically not liked in the series, but one of them I really appreciated because Fitz called it out. And I don't know if you guys, I don't know how can we, if yeah, you haven't paused it now, it's going to get a little spoilery. I apologize. But there's a trope I really dislike in this show over all four seasons where Gemma and Fitz just can't be happy. Mm-hmm. Like they're not allowed to be together. Like they constantly pull them apart. They're constantly and it's not like a will they, won't they. It's like a literal, like they already did and we're just not letting them be happy. And I saw that about to happen again. And I was like, they're going to do the thing again. And then Fitz literally says in the show, like, oh, we're just not allowed to ever. It's just never. We're not allowed to just be us. Like, it's never allowed to happen kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So somehow calling it out made me feel like better in the sense that, like, I was like, oh, not that they didn't know they were doing that, but that they're aware of what it does for the audience, I guess, if that makes sense. They're like, we get it, guys, but this is the trope. So like, you're either going to like it or you're not, kind of thing. And then the other trope that kind of happened here, but I'm okay with it only because this was my theory that I had mentioned in Slack to you guys, is they sort of did the thing I hate shows that do. And like, what's a good one that's guilty of this? What's the Disney show that I'm blanking on the name of that Melissa watches?
Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, they hit a reset button. Uh-huh. They kind of were like, boink, now we can do whatever we want again, kind of thing. And that bothers me some just because it feels sort of lazy at the end of the day. But the notion that they were all in super spoilery, all in the framework, was what my theory was before they started outing them all as LMDs. I was like, oh, I think they're all in the framework already. And then they weren't. They now have moved into it. So I'm like excited to see them play out that world and play with that kind of idea. But there was a piece of me that was like, reset button. They did it. They couldn't figure out how to get out of it, and they hit a reset button to move forward. So, but I think what's really good about it that makes it a little bit less of a reset button is that the thread of this season is the Darkhold, and that is continuing to move through, and it appears like it will play in the framework quite a bit as well. Yeah,
that's really smart, isn't it? That kind of has carried out throughout the whole thing, and it's not just like they're not just throwing away plot from like from Ghost Rider, because you're right, I never thought about that.
Yeah, because the whole thing is like the framework exists because of the Darkhold
fantasy.
So like I think that is what makes it feel less lazy to me. That doesn't feel like a, because usually what will happen on like on Once Upon a Time, and that show's great for different reasons too, I'm not just shitting on that show, but usually what they'll kind of do is go like, okay, reset button, and now the story is about how the queen is evil again, and you're like,
professional
okay.
Wrestling, it's like people like go like heel and face, and it's like, who's person's bad now, like what's going on, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, and this one felt a little more tied together, and this reset feels more purposeful and less like, oh, we can't figure out what to do right now kind of thing. So I thought the show was great. I thought the episode was great. I'm still excited to see what they do inside of the framework now. So
yeah, I thought it was really neat revelation that the fact that while inside the framework, each one of them had their biggest regret removed. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all of them sort of have new lives inside the framework. And I guess we're going to get to really experience those. And of course, the big reveal was that, you know, Ward is back in some capacity.
Can't get rid of him.
I know he can't. I was expecting him to come back as a LMD, and I was just like, that'd be perfect to bring him back as an LMD, but who knows, that still may happen. But I don't know, man. There was something about this episode that it felt very comic booky. There was some really great stuff that kind of harkened back to Terminator 2 and Aliens for me, like when they had Daisy with the axe shotgun shooting Mace, and just like him kind of shrugging off the shotgun blows. I'm like, oh man, I'm watching fucking T2 right now, and I'm like, this is great.
Or even May with the trigger.
And I just felt, you know, I like that just I love the brutality of this episode, and the fact that they're on at 10 p.m. now is the only way they were able to pull that off. You know, like right. It has gone very dark this season, you know, and even though the people getting hacked up and stuff were robots, it was still incredibly violent. And yeah. Like, you know, to see these characters that you love, you know, getting stabbed in the face and like shot, and you know, Mac gets blown to like itty bitty pieces.
Bits, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, just a phenomenal episode, I think. And, if they can maintain the same level of quality, and I feel like also the episode was just shot really well, like everything, like the camera work and everything was just really, really great. And that's hard.
The music was really good in this one as well.
Was it?
I don't know if it was a new composer, but it's the first time I've noticed the music and been like, oh wow, like these are solid music choices. So
that's cool. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I just know like every once in a while, with the Shield, I'll finish an episode and be like, that's one I'm gonna have to watch again. And this was one that I clicked save on the DVR because I'm like, I'm gonna rewatch this and kind of check out some of the stuff I missed, just because everything was really, really solid.
I think it's a feat to put out 22-hour-long episodes every season and like make it coherent and good. And I like this notion of breaking a season up into thirds. And
it's really smart.
Having one the Darkhold be the long straw, right? Like that's the thing that's going to keep you going through the whole thing, but we're going to do three kind of succinct storylines that'll make it easier. You get less fatigue and it's more interesting. And like, I think it's a really good call. So rather than
having like those shitty standalone episodes where it's like Coulson goes to get groceries and there's a metal guy there and he fights him. And then you're like, that was just useless. Like, exactly. What was that about? Yeah. Like, yeah. So
we've been watching a ton of Clone Wars, you know, and they are guilty of that one a lot, where it's just this episode's about the droids. And you're like, oh, cool. Let's get through it, guys.
Like, I really want to see one of the main ones. Yeah, those are bad.
Anyway, I wanted to drop one real quick thing. The next episode, which it's still continuing next week, it's just that the third is over. The next episode is titled What If, which is a throwback to Marvel Comics, which was a long-running Marvel Comics series called What If.
Love it.
Where they would do things like, what if Wolverine had Magneto's powers? And like whatever dumb idea came out of somebody's
head. Yeah, those are good. Those are good stuff.
I expect to see a lot of Matrix-like stuff in the final episodes.
When they have the realization that they're in the framework kind of thing, like, and they can maybe control it.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
Because the whole notion here is that Daisy and Gemma are hacking the framework, right?
Right. So, and I read an interview with the showrunners, and they said that when they come back, Daisy and Gemma are the only ones that know that they are in the framework, and everyone else is obviously oblivious to the fact that they're in the framework.
Right.
So it probably will allow them to manipulate it in some fashion, which is just going to be really neat, you know?
Cool. Yeah. I think it's like I said, like the things that would usually just annoy me are now more exciting than annoying. Like it's like, oh, they're actually doing something with this.
Yeah.
All right, so in our question of the week, sort of to piggyback on the Mass Effect Andromeda combat trailer that was released recently, we asked, in Andromeda, what sort of character do you think you'll build first? So we got a bunch of responses, of course. I know that a lot of people that have followed us from the beginning know that we sort of started this podcast and website sort of in the throes of Mass Effect 1, 2, you know, somewhere around there. And so, of course, we got a lot of folks coming back to answer our question. We really appreciate that. And our first response is from Chris Jenkins at Clogglip. I can never say his name. I've said it like a million times.
Clogglip.
Says, sniper wielding sentinel with dem tech skills.
And I'm just going to go ahead and throw mine in and just say ditto.
Ditto.
Ditto. Yeah.
That's your archetype, man.
Yeah. But the new tech skills that they showed off looked pretty dope. So
the fact that you could charge up that one ability with the shock. Oh man, it looks so good.
Yeah.
So next one is Haggis McHaggis. It says someone that uses all the guns and man alive, are there going to be a lot of guns this time? In the combat trailer, they were just going through, there's, you know, these four different classes of guns. And then they just kind of like briefly showed the list on the left-hand side. You're like, oh, there's like 20, 30 guns in this game now. It's like, it's insane.
It's crazy. Yeah. I'm already lobbying super hard. I haven't got confirmation of this, but like pretty much my favorite weapon in Mass Effect 3 multiplayer is the saber. It's not the best weapon, but it's the weapon I like the most. And it's
kind of the
like,
semi-automatic rifle.
It's like the... it's a like a medium range. It's an assault rifle, but it fires like a sniper rifle in the sense that it's kind of slow firing. You fire one round at a time.
Right, but right. I remember I used that on my. On my sneaky characters.
Oh yeah. But I think that weapon has like the second highest damage in the game, like per individual shot, I think something like that. Or maybe it's like per assault rifle, second highest assault rifle damage or something like that. But it's not like the best weapon, but it just feels like it feels super accurate, and it's accurate enough that you can like explode heads on people, and which is very satisfying. And we always talk about like the feel of guns in games, and like the sound of that weapon when you're firing it, because it sounds different when someone else is using it, but when you fire it in Mass Effect multiplayer, the sound is incredible. And so I hope the gun comes back. So, anyways, that's part of my answer, at least, to add in with Haggis. So let's continue.
Bunny at Winged Lioness says, I'm going to be able to make the perfect adept / vanguard combo.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that we should point out now is that classes aren't restricted anymore. So if you want to do like an infiltrator adept, you can basically mix and match with any three abilities and kind of build your class out, and then even go in deeper and then tweak out each one of the abilities. So like if you have a throw, there's like look like 8 different options for like what you can do with your biotic throw. It's like it's bonkers right now.
Yeah,
it looks like the level of it looks like a similar skill progression tree for individual ability, but like you said, now you can mix and match to your heart's content and really just kind of create whatever kind of character you want. So like there's, like you said, that class restriction of like, oh, you have to be a sentinel and you only have these abilities is not there. And not only that, but you can use whatever kind of weapons you want too. So you can be you can be a vanguard and wield like whatever, a sniper rifle, if that's what you want to do. You know what I mean? Like everything is available to you now, which I think is a great idea for a game like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Katie Lee at Katie Lee says, a cross between a traditional vanguard and a sniper tech. Well, there you go. So excited. So yeah, you can be
so much vanguard love.
We definitely have a lot of team vanguard in our community, which is like, that is very true thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Platinum Fist, Carlo, hey buddy, he says, gotta spec out those biotic and combat skills, # vanguard.
Is there any love for tech builds? I'll give my answer is that I kind of like, I know that biotics are hot, right? So I decided to try sort of the less popular of the two, and I kind of got really into the tech abilities, especially in multiplayer, and especially when they started introducing things like the flame cannon and the ice abilities. You remember all that stuff?
Oh yeah, sure.
There was a class where you could like ice people and then bash them with the shield. I think that was remember that they released that human soldier that had the big like omni shield thing.
Oh yeah, and man. There were some crazy classes added to multiplayer after a while.
Yeah. So you could like freeze people and bash them with the shield. And like, I don't know. I just like tech abilities, 'cause you can do things like strip shields, and I think that's where some of the turrets came from if you were fighting on like the Geth side and stuff like that. So I don't know, I'm kind of into the tech classes, if you will. So I think that's what I'm going to try to go for. If I get my saber, I'm going to do some tech abilities and just kind of make my character as fast as possible.
Cool. Yeah, it looks like there's like blink, like some sort of movement powers and stuff you can get now on top of the jetpacks. Everybody has jetpacks.
Yeah,
jetpacks, and then it looks like there's, you know, a biotic sort of teleportation or blink ability. So it's like it's going to be a lot faster. It's going to take some getting used to.
It looks the game. I don't know. Like I thought Mass Effect 3 was like very much faster than Mass Effect 2, and then somehow Andromeda looks faster than 3. So I'm really excited to really get into like the speed and fluidity of the game. So that's why I want to build a fast character.
Joel C. Habery at Cliffy Joel says, I absolutely destroy using the Phantom in ME3 multiplayer, so my build will be something along those lines.
Oh man, if they have that sort of teleportation, melee, assassination type thing this time, oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
That's going to be so much fun. I guess I'll say mine real quick. I always played... My first playthrough was always an infiltrator with like a big honking Black Widow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to obviously do the same thing this time around. I think I'm going to do Infiltrator, and then I'm going to do backup with tech and kind of go down the turret route as well. So sort of play a stealthy engineer type character. So like stealth, put your turret up like on maybe a high location, because now you can hop up and use your jetpack. So vantage point, and then lay down the waste, which will be fun. And then second playthrough, I usually do all biotic stuff. So I'm looking forward to mess. And it looks like they made biotics just insane this time around. Like some of the footage I've seen is just beautiful looking. So that's playthrough number two. Well, I guess now you can have I heard there's no level cap. And so technically speaking, you can keep playing to the point where you unlock everything, and then you can just basically spec out your character any way you want, because they don't penalize you for specs. So you can, set your preferences and have your favorites, and you can do like a biotic spec and then tech spec. So
I think from the screens I saw, it looks like you can, they don't penalize you, but you can get kind of like character bonuses for synergies, like with some of your abilities, by putting like a lot of points into one class or another. But it also looks like you can assign like three different abilities to your character at any one time. So like you could feasibly, I don't know if this is possible, but you could feasibly like add like pull and like something that would strip shields, and then kind of like combine tech and biotic abilities along with like your weapon specialization. So that could be lead to some really interesting builds for people that are into the nuts and bolts of the game. I think it could be a lot of fun.
It's gonna be insane.
Yeah. It's a Nerdy Life at It's a Nerdy Life says, probably starting with Vanguard plus adding in Overload and all the shotguns, which is that's how you do Vanguard, man. I think the jetpack is good, because I feel like Vanguard always had an unfair mobility advantage over the other classes, and that you can charge to any place on the battlefield where there's already an enemy, which really at times can exploit the battlefield and get you out of trouble very quickly and save you a lot of time in like maneuvering. So I think
especially when you had that one Vanguard ability that recharged your biotic shield, remember that? Mm-hmm. That was like the bread and butter on how to play a Vanguard on an insane mode. Is just you got to level that up. So
that's how I played insane on Mass Effect 3, was like spamming that ability and just kind of moving in between all of the what are those, the banshees, right? That like,
oh my gosh,
they suck you in and destroy you.
Yeah. I'm actually gonna kind of miss those. They were the most terrifying damn things ever.
Mm-hmm.
Bruna Mello at BMello42 on Twitter says, my favorite class is Vanguard, along with the new combat. It seems like it's going to be even more fun. Mm-hmm.
Ash at Lady Face Shred says Infiltrator or Vanguard. I'm thinking.
We definitely have some popular themes.
No one plays Soldier. No one's I'm going to be Soldier.
Well, the second person did. It was, I think it was Haggis that said someone that uses all the guns. Yeah. Which is like, it's too bad, because the Soldier gets some like pretty decent tech.
You get
abilities.
That time dilation, right? Like that was the big thing. You can slow down time and just like unload, mm-hmm. The Ravager magazine for half an hour, which was actually really satisfying.
Yeah, and the Soldier always gets the what is that ability that looks like you're kind of firing out like a heat seeking missile out of your weapon,
Oh yeah.
It's like
I forget what it was called now. It's been a long time.
You can spam that, and that actually turns out to be sort of the activator for a lot of the other tech abilities in the game, So if you're doing your, what are those called? When you like synergize like two biotic or two tech abilities, like tech explosion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's what activates a lot of the explosions for other characters in multiplayer. So it's still a valuable class for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Captain Lacey at Zoro4Me3 says, I'm all about biotics, but maybe I'll dab a bit into tech as well. Maybe that's the idea, is that by allowing people to do whatever they want, they'll go to their kind of like preferred classes, but maybe they'll try the other abilities, right? And then that kind of opens up other possibilities for multiplayer, maybe making different types of characters. So not like everybody plays as Vanguard and not everybody plays as Soldier, right? Because I think remember in Mass Effect 1 or 2, BioWare released some stats about how people play, and like at that time when shooters were like, people were still playing the game like a shooter, like a lot of people played as Soldier, not as some of the other classes. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah. That is true. I remember that. Mm-hmm. Cannot Compute, who's at DevinDB on Twitter, says Paragade character with focus on biotic and tech powers, most likely. Maybe also Vanguard on the side to bring the carnage with charge and Nova plus shotgun if in the mood and if necessary. Yeah, it's crazy. There is no Paragon and Renegade this time. They have removed it from the game. So that's kind of crazy.
Smart.
I'm totally fine with that because that's how I played.
Yeah, you've never liked it, yes.
Yeah, it wasn't my thing. Wasn't my deal. Amanda T at Fluid Fire. Hi, Amanda. Says, I usually end up with a Sentinel type because I like the diversity of skills. Sarcastic Goody Two Shoes, kind of like me, and the Femme Rider, of course. And the rest will be left up to how the game makes it based on plot points.
For sure. I normally play as the female, but the male writer is named Scott. So do I just by default have to play as the male character in the game? I feel like I do.
Well, the other writer is all still in the game, so they both exist in the game. So you won't have to just have the other one. Yeah, you won't have to have the other one not exist.
Sounds good. So, well, I might have to play as the male in a first for me.
Make sure you give him a little beard.
Yeah, I will. I'll try to make him. I'll upload my game face and then just scan it.
I can't wait to show you guys the horror that I make out of my character. Yeah. That is like weird facial features left and right.
I just hope that you can still customize the color of your armor in multiplayer, because I really liked making like bubblegum pink Krogans, you know, to fight on the battlefield.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to that too.
I would imagine that they're going to. Yeah, multiplayer from the 5 seconds we've seen looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, it'll be great.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to episode 260 of the Rated NA podcast. We hope you guys enjoy it. And let's see. We'll probably have one more episode before we head over to PAX East. But if you're heading to PAX East, let us know on social media. We'd like to say hi. You can reach us on, email Matt, Scott, or Ash at nerdappropriate.com. You can reach us on Twitter, and that's at nerdappropriate, Facebook.com/nerdappropriate, Twitch.tv/nerdappropriate, and everywhere else nerdappropriate as well. And we'll be back next week with an all new show and all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, thanks to your wife Christina for sitting in for a few minutes with us. That was fun.
Yeah, no, it was had to tag her in. So that was she's secretly excited about being on the show. So
that was perfect.
She's like, I think I'm going to be on it. I'm like, you haven't listened in like 249 episodes. It's been a while. So anyway, thanks guys. See you later.
Bye.
Thanks.
Are you staying on, Christina?
That was perfect.
That was perfect.
Thanks. We're going to use all that. That's great.
Nice, nice. My Ash impression has gotten really good.